This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
a Sicilian court has convicted several men of using voodoo rituals and threats to force Nigerian women into prostitution when they arrived in Italy.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna. Full details coming up.
Also, Amnesty International's annual report documents human rights violations in nearly 160 countries, and authorities in Nigeria say some of the schoolgirls who were reportedly abducted when Boko Haram militants attacked their school this week have been rescued.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Cameroon says a wave of attacks by armed elephant poachers has killed at least 8 soldiers and rangers in a northern national park. The poachers killed elephants too, further shrinking the population of the increasingly endangered animals. Moki Edwin Kinziga traveled to the park and reports from Garoua, northern Cameroon.
A decomposing carcass of an elephant without its tusks lies in Cameroon's Bubangida National Park, some 17 kilometers from the border with Chad. Forest ranger Lamza Abdullahi says two of his colleagues were killed less than a week ago by heavily armed poachers. It was just one of several attacks within the past month.
C'est des braconniers qui sont venus hors du Cameroun à l'extérieur du pays.
The ranger Abdullahi says the poachers invaded Cameroon through its northern border with Chad, killed so many elephants and people who tried to resist and then escaped across the border before military reinforcement could come. He said the ranger's old weapons, like the rusty rifle he carries, are no match for the poaching gangs. Village self-defense groups protecting the park have just machetes and spears. Jean Abate, governor of the north region of Cameroon, where Bubangida is located, says 8 soldiers and forest rangers, as well as several members of village self-defense groups, have been killed.
Des mesures particulières sont prises et une opération.
He says the government of Cameroon has taken energetic measures to stop the attackers. He says the protection of Cameroon's territorial integrity and all of its resources must be assured to secure the population and prevent a mass killing of elephants like what happened in 2012 when the park lost 200 of the majestic animals. In 2012, officials reported incursions by Sudanese and Chadian poachers armed with machine guns and also operating in gangs on horseback. Prior to that year, Bubangida was home to an estimated 1,000 elephants. Conservation groups say the park lost at least 400 elephants in 2012, double the government estimate. Eric Kaba, of the international conservation group The Last Great Ape, says Cameroon is not alone. Vast numbers of elephants in Africa have been slaughtered to feed consumer demand for ivory in Asian countries.
In 1990, about 450,000 elephants existed in the wild, and we find a situation where 30 to 50,000 elephants are killed per year. If current trends continue, one thing is very clear is that in this very short term, we are going to lose elephants in the wild. The children coming up may only see the elephant in the zoo.
In 2012, Cameroon deployed hundreds of soldiers to the park to stem the attacks, but the soldiers' numbers have since been reduced amid other security challenges like the war against Boko Haram. The military says it is preparing a fresh deployment to Bubangida in response to the fresh wave of attacks. China, which was once the world's biggest market for ivory, has banned all trade in ivory and ivory products. The measure, which was announced last year, went into effect January. African countries have meanwhile been burning large stockpiles of seized wildlife products to discourage poachers and traffickers. In 2016, Cameroon burned some 2,000 illegally trafficked elephant tusks and hundreds of finished ivory products. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Garoua, Cameroon.
Rights group Amnesty International's annual report documents human rights violations in nearly 160 countries. It says 2017 saw the politics of hate and fear normalized by some of the most powerful leaders in the world. In its new report, Amnesty says actions by leaders in Egypt, the Philippines, Venezuela, China, Russia, and the United States have undermined the rights of millions. Amnesty's executive director, Margaret Huang, said they have openly defied human rights laws or have called for others to defy human rights laws. The report criticizes U.S. President Donald Trump on his immigration policies, for undermining press freedoms, and for his record on women's rights. VOA asked the White House and State Department for comment, but did not get a response. Amnesty says free speech suffered in 2017 and pointed to China, Egypt, and Turkey as the biggest offenders. VOA contacted the embassies of those countries in the U.S., but they have not yet replied.
For more than a decade, African nations have put in a generally dismal performance on Transparency International's annual Corruption Perceptions Index, and they continue to do so in 2017, according to the latest index released yesterday. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Sub-Saharan Africa continues to do poorly in Transparency International's annual Corruption Index, with Somalia maintaining its 12-year streak at the bottom of its chart of 180 countries. The index found more than two-thirds of the countries surveyed scored below 50 points on the 100-point scale, with an average score of 43. African nations averaged a score of 32. Somalia scored just 9. Transparency International's regional advisor for Southern Africa, Kate Mwaki, described Africa's past year.
Most African governments are failing to address corruption in the region, although we do have leaders that have invested in systemic responses to build strong institutions and create behavior change. So in terms of some of these rays of hope, at the top of the table, we have Botswana, Seychelles, Cabo Verde, Rwanda, and Namibia, who all score currently over 50. And then in terms of the very bottom of the table, there hasn't been much change. We still have the likes of South Sudan, Somalia, right at the bottom, and significant declines from countries like Malawi, Madagascar, Mozambique, and Guinea-Bissau.
But, she says, the African Union and several key leaders, notably the presidents of the two largest economies on the continent, Nigeria and South Africa, have recently made clean governance a pet issue. 2017 also saw the fall of several leaders long accused of shady dealings. Gambia's Yahya Jammeh, Angola's José Eduardo dos Santos, Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe, and, most recently, South Africa's Jacob Zuma. A high-level corruption scandal also tainted the administration of Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn, who resigned earlier this month amid mounting anti-government protests. But holdouts remain. The Democratic Republic of Congo's entrenched corruption-accused leader has repeatedly postponed elections, and the leaders of Uganda, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, Congo, and Cameroon have all long remained in power amid allegations of mismanagement. Zuma's successor, Cyril Ramaphosa, has made fighting corruption his signature issue. The billionaire businessman this week called for top government officials to be audited, starting with himself.
Now, if there ever has been anything that many South Africans would like to have line of sight of is the lifestyle audit of their public representatives. Now, that is something that I believe we have to do. And this will be done starting with the executive of the country Yes, we will go in that way.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari recently announced all national assets recovered in a recent anti-corruption drive would be sold to benefit the Treasury. Buhari is also the first AU anti-corruption czar. Mwaki says that the global watchdog has noted these developments.
2018 marks a very important year for the continent. We have seen this renewed commitment from the African Union and from leaders at the recent summit in Addis Ababa. It is encouraging, and we definitely support this. These are some of the things that we would be encouraging civil society and media and some of these other key stakeholders to hold these leaders to account.
She says that may be the best way to clear the dark clouds of corruption with the brightest of sunshine. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Authorities in Nigeria say some of the schoolgirls who were reportedly abducted when Boko Haram militants attacked their school this week have been rescued. The missing schoolgirls were discovered near the border between Yobe and Borno State yesterday, 2 days after gunmen stormed their school in the town of Dapchi in Yobe. The government did not say how many girls were rescued. Yesterday, authorities said more than 90 girls were missing after the raid. The disappearance has raised fears of another mass kidnapping by Boko Haram, which abducted 276 girls from a school in the village of Chibok in 2014. Since Boko Haram began its insurgency in 2009, more than 20,000 people have been killed and 2 million others forced to leave their homes in northeastern Nigeria.
A Sicilian court convicted several African men of using voodoo rituals to force Nigerian women into prostitution when they arrived in Italy. The sentences followed a police investigation on October 2016 into an organization that promised real job opportunities. The men ended up blackmailing the young women, often through voodoo rituals. Also, Italy's Interior Minister Marco Minniti said yesterday that migration was now under control. Josephine McKenna is in Rome following developments. She first spoke with me about the sentencings.
A Sicilian court has convicted several men of using voodoo rituals and threats to force Nigerian women into prostitution when they arrived in Italy. Several men, including John Osaro, Eamon Collins and Egwi Opita, have been given heavy sentences. The greatest sentence was 10 years in prison, and the other two were convicted for 7 years each. And these sentences follow a police investigation that began in October 2016 in several locations in southern Italy, stretching from Naples all the way to Sicily. Now, this organization was found guilty of promising real job opportunities for Nigerian migrants, but the men then ended up blackmailing the young women and often using voodoo rituals to ensure that they ended up in prostitution.
I also understand that they even contacted women in their countries of origin.
Yes, we've heard about this before. The connection between the traffickers here in Italy and in Nigeria in particular. And some of these women were contacted before they left Nigeria. Others were recruited in Sicilian reception centres in Siculiana and Catania. Those who refused to prostitute themselves were also drugged in some cases. Now, the sentences included criminal association related to trafficking, slavery, exploiting women for prostitution, and aiding illegal immigration. It's quite a significant sentence, but it really does give you a small indication of how widespread this is in Italy.
And looking on the broader situation with migration, Italy's Interior Minister Marco Minniti, he said that the migration was under control now.
Yes, migration is a huge issue in the Italian election, which is now due to take place on March the 4th. And the government has been at pains to indicate that it's taking steps to slow the flow of migration that we've seen across the Mediterranean. The Interior Minister, Marco Minniti, this week said that it was now under control, even though the government needed to maintain vigilance, and that human rights was of a fundamental concern for him. He said that the situation in Africa is very delicate, and particularly in Libya, where the situation, as we know, is quite fragile. But this year, we've seen 5,200 migrants land in Italy since the beginning of 2018. Last year, 120,000 migrants arrived in Italy across the Mediterranean. This is a big issue in this election, and it's polarizing voters. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the final days of this election campaign, as migration and immigration is a major issue.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
French President Emmanuel Macron faces one of the biggest tests to date in his young presidency, as his cabinet is examining controversial immigration legislation before parliamentary debate. A record 100,000 people asked for asylum in France last year, and like elsewhere in Europe, public opinion has soured against migrants. Lisa Bryan in Paris takes a look at what it means for migrants and for the government.
A metro rumbles overhead as a small group of migrants stomp their feet to stay warm on a cold morning. They're standing in front of a northeastern Paris office that processes asylum applications.
I came to take a refugee. I want to live here. I want to save a place. My government has made a problem with me.
46-year-old Abdelkader is an engineer from Jordan who crossed Egypt, Libya, the Mediterranean, and Italy before arriving here 3 weeks ago. His story is not completely clear, but he says he faces danger if he returns home.
No plan, only I want to take the paper. If the police catch me, make trouble with me. I need paper.
If French authorities find Abdelkader's story credible, he might benefit from proposed immigration legislation. It aims to speed up processing of asylum claims and make it easier for minors to get asylum status. But it would also toughen treatment for so-called economic migrants, sometimes doubling their time in detention centers and introducing jail sentences and fines for those crossing borders illegally to get here.
Calais n'est pas une porte d'entrée dérobée vers l'Angleterre. Et je veux être ici très clair.
French President Emmanuel Macron defends this mixed approach as firm and fair. He visited the port city of Calais last month, where a massive migrant squatter camp known as the Jungle was demolished in 2016. Macron vowed there would never be another jungle, although several hundred migrants are still camped out in Calais. A recent poll also shows most French believe there are too many immigrants here. But critics call the new legislation overly harsh. They include some members of Macron's own The Republic on the Move party, which includes politicians from the right and left. Some say it violates basic human rights. Louis Georgetin, who heads an umbrella association representing Black French, says deterring immigration also doesn't make economic sense.
The best people from Africa, from Europe, from all over the world go in many other places now. So I don't know why we're doing that. We're losing image, we're losing expertise, we're losing human resources, we're losing our own identity.
The group of asylum seekers does not seem aware of the fierce debate over their future. A man who identified himself as Shinwari from a part of Afghanistan with the same name says after failing to get asylum in Austria, he's trying France.
Do you hear about the President Macron has a new immigration law he's trying to get passed? Have you heard about that?
Yeah, we heard. Therefore, I came because everybody say he's a good man. We have hope here now.
A few minutes later, police arrive to get the men to move on. Their final destination remains up in the air. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
When mourners gathered this week to bid farewell to the father of Zimbabwe's opposition politics, Morgan Tsvangirai, fractures were clear in his movement for democratic change. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinovashi reports.
The youths chanting are calling for Thokozani Kupe's blood. the vice president of the Movement for Democratic Change, was sheltered in a homestead nearby the scene of Morgan Tsvangirai's funeral. Douglas Monzora, the MDC secretary general, was with Kupe when they were attacked, trying to attend the funeral of the party's founder.
When we arrived at the venue, we got a very good reception, and our security relaxed, and we started walking towards the homestead because we wanted to see the Tsvangirai family. As we were walking towards the homestead, then a group, first of about 10, started chanting hate songs directed specifically at Vice President Kupe.
The group quickly became a mob.
Then they started pelting her with stones. They started arming themselves with sticks. That's when the security came in together with the police. And they started throwing missiles at her. And I was lucky to escape. I wasn't hurt myself.
He adds that the attacks included sexist, tribal, and inflammatory language. The situation became tense, and they sought refuge at a home nearby. The youths that mobbed the house, where Kupe and others were hiding, demanded that they be addressed by one of the other vice presidents, Nelson Chamisa. It was tense navigating around the crowd that surrounded the house where Kupe and others had sought refuge. Threats were even made to journalists present. It was more than 3 hours before civic society leaders and police could calm the situation and arrange for Kupe to be released unharmed. Alexander Rosero is a political analyst.
It's an indicator of who the stabilizing factor in MDC has. It happened to be Morgan Tsvangirai and no one else. It's also unhealthy for the MDC fighting barely before even burying their leader. It means there are going to be more tensions going forward.
Rosero adds that disputes within the MDC complicate the party's biggest challenge in the new post-Tsvangirai era. National elections expected later this year. Chamisa is the acting president of the party, although some senior leaders and factions supporting Kupe and the third vice president, Elias Mudzuri, dispute that. Monzora says Chamisa knew about the attack on Kupe, but he did not mention it during his speech at the funeral.
When I got to the stage, after being held hostage for quite some time, the very first person I talked to was Honorable Chamisa. And I told him that President Tsvangirai, whom we are burying here, would not approve of what is happening. I would have thought that that would have deserved a special mention in his speech, and I did not hear it.
When the crowd booed Opamu Chingori, the chairman of the ruling ZANU-PF party, who was representing President Emmerson Mnangagwa, Chamisa was quick to jump to her rescue. The infighting reflects the struggle among the three vice presidents, Kupe, who was elected, and Chamisa and Mudzuri, who were appointed by Tsvangirai. Some party members say the violence was part of the work of Chamisa supporters. Chamisa's phone went unanswered when he was called for comment. But the day after the funeral, he released a statement denouncing violence and saying internal investigations are underway. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Aiden Uko, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.